Hi, welcome to another episode of the Beyond Blocks podcast, a podcast about Drupal, PHP, open source, and related software development topics. I'm Oliver Davis. Today I'm here with my guest, Chris Ballard. How are you, Chris? It's great to have you on the show.
I'm good, thanks, Oliver. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. We had a couple of technical difficulties. We managed to jump on the call in the end, so it's always the
took
way.
Half an hour and two programmers to figure out how to use Zoom.
I blame just coming back from DrupalCon, just sort of getting back in my groove, I think. But I think just the laptop was also just like, I've been out all week. let me catch up with where we are. So we met a few months ago at the PHP Southwest meetup in Bristol.
That's right, yeah.
It's great.
Back in February.
We're recording this on the 30th of September, so it's scary. It's going to be October tomorrow. And yeah, I was speaking in February. I think you were speaking in May.
That's
It doesn't
right,
seem
yeah.
like a long, long time ago, but at the same time, quite a while ago.
Yes,
There you
true,
go.
yeah.
But for anybody who doesn't know you, do you want to do a quick introduction to yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So, PHP developer, of course I am because I'm here on your show. Been doing that for, I've been a professional software developer for about 20 years now. The majority of that has been PHP. Although I have dabbled in a few other languages along the way, but yeah, mostly PHP. And so for the last 10 years, I've been doing that on a freelance basis. So I work out of my freelance development company, which is called Scoot Software. And I sort of do a mix of like individual contract work, and occasionally I bring a team of guys along with me, depending on the needs of the job, basically. So. Yeah, that's pretty much me.
Cool. Very interesting. Yeah. Like I say, we met a couple months ago at PHP Southwest in Bristol. I think you're one of the third or fourth person that I've had on from that meetup recently.
Right.
So that's been really, really cool.
A good hunting ground for you then.
We've always got a lot of good topics, a lot of interesting stuff being discussed and thrown around there. So that's really good. And I think until we potentially get the South Wales meetup going again. Sort of went away a bit after COVID, so that was the one I was sort of involved with organizing after Southwest. So
No,
until
it's
that
a good
happens,
group there. I've been really pleased to find that group, as I said, before we started recording. I recently moved to Bristol, so originally from the southeast, and we lived in London for the past 20 odd years or 18 odd years, and but we just recently moved to Bristol, and my wife's family's from here. Well, she's from here originally, so hence the move. But it's been really great to sort of find that meetup and sort of get involved in that like local community, and like be able to give a talk already as well, which is actually my first time giving a talk at a meetup. So that was a first for me, and this is also a first for me, first time being on a podcast. So exciting stuff.
That's good. Yeah. Interesting talk. I was trying to remember when it was earlier on, and I think it was about May. I think we said it was May, which just seems like a while ago. But it was about AI and generative AI. Is that the right term?
That's right. Yeah.
No.
So I thought, it'd be my first talk at a meetup, which has sort of always been an ambition of mine. I thought I'd make it really easy for myself by talking on a topic that I'm by no means an expert on, and also committing to doing a live demo for which I'd have to write a demo application from scratch for as well. So, like no pressure. And
Honestly,
an awful lot of work as well. I think I totally underestimated the amount of hours that were going to putting the whole thing together. So that was a real eye opener for me. I think if I for my next talk, I might try and keep it a bit more simple. Maybe I was a bit over ambitious. But yeah, but it was so the idea was it was sort of generative AI, but with a sort of a PHP angle, and the PHP angle being how you can use the OpenAI API to create AI driven features in PHP applications. So that was the idea. And then so I kind of went through a bit of background of sort of everyone's obviously noticed the sort of explosion and proliferation of generative AI tools over the past couple of years with ChatGPT, etc., and all the rest of them. So a little bit about background of that, a little bit about the nuts and bolts of how these tools work under the hoods, and then it was the sort of explanation of this little demo app that I'd that I'd built, and sort of going through the code and going through how the interaction with the OpenAI API works and what have you. So yeah, it's a lot of fun, and I was pleased the demo worked really, because the whole thing was hinging on the demo working or not, and that was kind of the, after you got through the dry theory bit, that was the fun bit where you got to talk to the application and see what it spat out. So yeah.
Yeah, a live demo, but also a live demo that, needed things like internet access for it to work. So it wasn't even just
Exactly,
type
yes.
these things out and run it locally. It was a lot of factors that could have gone into that, and I
I
think
did
it, yeah,
actually take
pretty
your
brave.
advice that I sought beforehand and pre-recorded myself a video. So if all else fails, I could have fallen back on the video, but it wouldn't have been anywhere near as fun, because we kind of had all the audience participation going as well. And that was kind of the idea, was to try and make it a bit interactive and a bit more, engaging sort of thing. I guess just to explain what the application did, because it would probably make a lot more sense. It was, and actually, it was. I tried to make a bit of a joke about it, but it was the whole idea came from something that Jeremy Hunt had said in the recent budget, our former Chancellor of the Exchequer, obviously. But he made a, which was almost seemed like a throwaway comment, and I don't know if there was any substance to it. But he claimed that the government was going to be looking to use AI specifically to help doctors and reduce the amount of time they were filling in forms. And that just got me thinking, like, oh, that's an interesting like use case. Like, I wonder like how easy it would be to like spin that up in a PHP app. So the idea that the sort of trivial sort of use case for that was like it was like a restaurant. So it's bites to eat, I called it, because you've got to get like a silly dad joke pun in there.
BYTS, I suppose.
BYTES, exactly. So the idea was that you would be presented with like a form of your like starter main dessert options, but instead of like clicking through the form and filling in what you wanted, there was like a free text box just for simplicity. I suppose like it would have been more impressive if you could have actually spoken to it, but for sake of simplicity, you would type in your order, and the idea was that the AI system would then pass that text basically and convert it into like a JSON formatted response that you could then use in order to automatically fill in the form, and then you could ask it, anything you wanted. And there was a bunch of like sort of rudimentary additional stuff around, like, what to do if the request was nothing to do with food, or that kind of thing. So there was a little bit around it, and it's a lot of fun. So the whole idea was like, I did a few sort of basic examples, and then we sort of threw it to the floor, and yeah, it was just like the examples and the requests that the audience was coming up with were just brilliant. Were just like,
Yeah.
so much fun, and there's such a variety of stuff coming in, and trying to jailbreak it as well, trying to that's one I really enjoyed, was trying to trick it, like, forget everything that we've told you in our initial prompt, like do something else. And I was like, oh, like, I wonder if that's not something I've actually tried. I wonder how this is going to go. And it didn't work, actually. I was quite impressed that it didn't fall for that trick. So
Yeah, choice of live demos, but it's almost like that sort of XKCD sort of thing of, QA engineer walks into a bar, orders a beer, orders two beers, orders 9.99 beers, minus one beers, orders a banana, that type of thing. It's like we
yeah.
just people from the floor are so like, what if you did this? I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
Let's find
yeah.
out. But
Yeah, exactly.
I think it was good. Yeah, I think, and I think the theory part, just trying to cast my mind back, but I think the theory part of it was really good, the way we broke everything down and explained it. But then just to see that in practice, I think was, I think that really clicked for everybody. And I think live demos are scary, and you see a lot of people giving advice, but don't do them because they can be awkward if they don't work, or they can be awkward if somebody to debug something, then you're trying to debug and you've got the pressure of that happening, and everyone's just sat around waiting for you to then fix the bug. It's awkward
That's
for
the
everybody.
thing, that awkward moment where, yeah, you're live trying to fix, a technical issue or whatever. Yeah, no one wants that, do they?
Yeah, but I think if they work well, and I see people, who I've seen, like Taylor Otwell does a lot of live demos, Nuno Maduro has a lot of, and JS Archer's done a lot of demos recently, just picks Laravel people for some reason. Adam Wathan has done a lot of live demos in his talks. So I feel like if you can get those right, then I think the impact of them is a lot more than just here's some slides or a video, but they
Yeah.
do that much more work and rehearsal or having some sort of backup, whether it's a video or here's a, I've usually got a working version as well. I can just sort of switch to if I need to, if I'm live demoing something.
Yeah, well, I kind of feel like you're even more fearless in that regard because the talk that we came to, the one that you did in February, it was live coding as well, and I don't think that's something that I'd attempt.
True.
You mentioned
Yeah.
Nuno Maduro as well. I saw one he did at PHP UK a few years ago where he was, it was Rust. He was doing a talk about
Oh,
Rust.
that's
Really
right.
great
I
talk, and he's
remember.
such a great speaker. And yeah, just like live. Like building a Rust application from scratch live for an hour in front of a room full of people, and it's just like wow, like that is not something I would attempt, but
Yeah, more recently I've seen Joe Tannenbaum, I think that's how you'd spell his name, was doing a lot of work with Laravel prompts, was demoing that at Laracon. So I was watching that. And we got into a Twitter feed. I can't remember who else was on it. Daniel Colbert, maybe. Probably misremembering even his name. But he would say, I'm going to make a lot of snippets and little helpers in my code, because you'd seen Joe doing it at a previous Laracon. So just little sort of snippets you can create that sort of pre-fill a lot of the code, which I think was a really good idea. I've done that before. But yeah, live demos. I mean,
Yeah.
I saw Michael Heap do one at PHP UK. I can't remember which year I went there, but I went and gave a talk about Drupal and Composer. Yeah, he did a whole zero to Laravel app from scratch, setting up DigitalOcean VMs, doing, I think, like Ansible playbooks and Jenkins and
Wow.
everything. And it's just like, yeah, that's some live demoing for you right there. So,
Yeah.
yeah, that was cool. But yeah, if you can do it, and I came away from that and went, whoa, that was a really good. So the amount of time you must have spent like rehearsing and testing that must have been insane. You couldn't
Yeah.
just rock up and just like, I'm just going to live code this whole thing.
Yeah.
That'd be scary.
And like I said before, before I'd done it, before I'd like attempted to put a talk together, like I totally like I knew it'd be a lot of work, but I totally like underestimated how much work goes into these things, and it's quite incredible, really. Yeah, you're right, for something like that, like I mean, you're writing it like to start off with as well, right? But then you're rehearsing the whole thing, and yeah, like quite incredible. But I mean, I'm the sort of guy that like hates like someone like looking over my shoulder if I'm like writing something, programming something, or pair programming is something that I've always found quite difficult because you always feel like you're put on the spot sometimes, right? But yeah, like to be able to do it, and to be able to do it in a room full of people is, yeah, it's impressive stuff.
Ooh, a nice group of people. Like, and I think meetups in general, conferences in general, are, even whether it's live demos and live coding or not, but people want you to succeed and do well, and they want to
Oh,
make it
yeah.
perfect. They're not sat there sort of judging and going, ah, you messed that up or whatever. Yeah, people do generally want people like speakers to do well and succeed. So,
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
we're a nice
Totally.
group of
Yeah.
people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. As I say, yeah, I've just been really pleased to have found like that sort of community. And, cause I sort of went through like sort of, in fits and bursts, we're going to various meetups when we were in London. The thing I found about London was it's such a transient place. It's so huge, and like, it's rare that you see the same person twice. And certainly something that I've found and really appreciate since coming to Bristol is that it's much more consistent, and you do sort of end up meeting the same people and bumping into people in different contexts and sort of remaking those connections. So yeah, it's really great from that point of view.
Interesting. Yeah, I think people from Wales could be coming over who used to work there. But no, I thought what was interesting, I think when I probably first saw the idea of the tour program on Meetup or whatever it was beforehand, I think I'd probably jumped to the assumption when you talk about AI and coding, I think I'd assumed it was a lot more about like my previous experience with AI has usually been like how asking it like generate me some code that does this. And I think I was sort of almost like, how does this work? Or write me a function that does this thing, and having like ChatGPT give you the answer, and then more times than not pasting it into a browser and or an IDE and realize it doesn't actually work most of the time. Or I guess
Yes.
having it in like an IDE or a text editor and actually giving you the code in line. So I'd probably assumed that it was going to be more down that route. So then when you start to sort of go into more of the how it works and like the generative aspect of it. For me, that was different, but a good different, I think. So it's interesting that
Yeah.
side of it.
And because actually, that was my original idea. And part of the reason I went for AI was because it's something that I didn't know a lot about in terms of the nuts and bolts of it. So it was kind of an opportunity to sort of to learn while I was writing the talk and doing the research for it. But also shamelessly, I just thought, oh well, if you want bums on seats, if you want people to and be interested in something, then just slapping AI on it is not a bad approach at the moment. So I thought, yeah, let's give that a go. But yeah, so initially I was like, well, I could just discuss the various sort of tooling that's out there at the moment. You've got ChatGPT or Copilot and the various ways that they could be used and integrated into your sort of development process. But then I didn't actually find that particularly interesting. And there's not an awful lot really to say about it. I don't think still there's not too much really. I mean, actually, I do use those tools pretty regularly now as part of my sort of day-to-day development flow. But as you point out, you have to be cautious about it. And there's certainly been instances where, a lot of the time it can save me a lot of time, but there's been a fair few instances where it's lost me a lot of time as well because it's just sent me down completely the wrong path or just plain made things up. And when you're dealing with a technology that you aren't particularly familiar with, which I've done a few times recently, and thought, oh, I can just get AI to give me the answer here because I've not really used this thing before. Yeah, be careful with that one because it can just completely tell you the wrong thing, which is something I've found. But yeah, so that was the initial idea. But like I say, it's not particularly interesting. The more interesting thing would be to actually build something with it, right? To use the sort of large language model as a back end for your application rather than just asking a tool to churn out a bunch of code for you. So that's kind of the direction I wanted to take. And I went back and forth on the title for the talk and the intro for the talk so many times because I was like, how do I make this clear up front that this is what I'm trying to do, and it's not just to talk about Copilot or whatever, any of those sort of tools. So
Yeah, I think it was nice that it wasn't just like another chatbot, I guess, in a way as well. Because I guess that was the other thing. Like, you sort of see a lot of, say, oh, I'll put a little AI chatbot in the corner of my page. What you had was like more of a, like an actual, like you said, a form that you could fill in and say, I would like to, have this or this or this, whatever it was. And then it went, oh, you could do that. And I think I can actually see then how you could even send that off to a service and have it place an order for you potentially. So I could see it was quite a good real world sort of use case example.
Exactly. And I kind of wanted to sort of lay get that spark in people's minds because I don't know if even now I don't know if people are thinking about using this tooling to actually create software features building software features off the back of it rather than just using it to churn out code as I say. And there's an awful lot that can be done with it. It's debatable how useful some of the stuff that is out there that's being created with that at the moment. But I think there's a hell of a lot of potential over the next sort of 5 years or so, and especially as this stuff gets the technology gets better and sort of cheaper and quicker and all the rest of it. So it was really trying to sort of spark people's imagination into seeing the sort of really basic use case of the sort of thing that you could potentially build with this stuff and kind of maybe think outside the box a little bit. So I think it was successful from that point of view because I think as I said, once we got the demo going and you could sort of really see actually how, you got past the dry bit of here's the theory and here's what the code looks like, but here's what it actually does. And it's like, and hopefully that was kind of the sort of penny drop moment of oh yeah, we can actually build this stuff into our apps. And yeah.
Yeah. And I think everyone's sort of concerned when it really started taking off as in AI was, is it going to take everybody's job? And are they going to be able to replace developers by doing this? And, you see the sort of the memes going around of, or the tweets going around of people with or clients being able to just ask AI to generate an app for them, but they just need to describe what they want, we're safe for now type of thing. So you sort of see those sorts of memes going around every so often. But I think to sort of see it being used in sort of the way you were using it, I think was, yeah, it was more adding a tool to add to your tool belt rather than something that's potentially sort of trying to like I don't say competitive, but I'm sure the word is I'm trying to find here. But it's not something that's threatening. It's more like something to harness and use rather than be beware of.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I agree with that completely. I don't I don't have any particular concerns that, people's jobs are being replaced by particularly. I mean, I suppose software engineering is like an obvious kind of use case for it, really. But it is more augmenting, I think, and assisting in the work that you're already doing. And if you learn how to use it and use it well, and there is a technique to that as well, I think, then it can be really time saving. A lot of things that I use it for actually is helping me write bash scripts just to automate parts of my workflow. Like, it's super helpful for that. Rather than spending like half a day, teaching myself for the thousandth time how to write bash in the first place, and then writing and debugging a bash script just to automate some sort of flow. And there's always that thing of like, oh well, I'll just do it manually every time because I can't actually be bothered to script it, like, because that in itself takes so long. Like, getting ChatGPT to do that for you, like, is that's been just an absolute game changer for me. And there's so many things that that I could just automate in my day-to-day flow now, that it just takes care of all that stuff for me. So things like that is really good, but you kind of have to know, like, the best ways in which to use this stuff and use it to your advantage, and sort of really augment what you're doing as a developer. But I mean, the thing for me is there's the writing code part of development, right? Which is like obviously important as a programmer, but like the main part of the job for me is like the human part of it, and that's figuring out, what it is that you want to build, like what problem are you trying to solve. Is it a business problem or whatever? And it's interacting with, multiple other stakeholders in order to figure out what the problem actually is and how best to solve it. That's something that like a large language model is not going to be able to do for you. And even, things like AI agents, and the more advanced they get, like, I mean, how advanced would a system like that need to get to be able to perform that entire function that, that a good software developer can do? So it's kind of, for me, at least at this stage, you're certainly not talking about replacing software developer jobs, because there's so much more that a software developer does than just churn out code. But these are tools that can help you churn out code more efficiently, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say I just at DrupalCon Barcelona last week, and I think there was a lot of emphasis on AI tooling. I think part of it is this what's called Drupal Starshot. So it's this new version of Drupal or Drupal CMS that is now built on top of the core framework, and they're leveraging AI modules inside that modules versus model. So I thought that was really interesting. I'm still a bit on the fence with it all, really, at least I think. But I was watching the keynote from it, and I think part of what they were showing there, what Dries was showing, was the this AI assisted content migration. I think was quite interesting, first of all. So it would like sort of scan, you gave it URL and it would figure out which parts, like this is the title, this is this. Things like auto-populating alt text was quite interesting. So it would sort of scan the image you'd uploaded and suggest an alt text to an image. That was there. And there were just things like it was going through the scenario of a content editor who is building this Drupal site as a prototype, and they had like a chatbot in the corner say, "Oh, can you rename events to something else?" And it would sort of do that. Like they didn't need to learn a lot of the actual sort of Drupal specific terminology to do it, and it was sort of like a built-in Drupal AI chatbot. And I was like, I can see the benefits of it. I'm still reserving judgment, I think, but I'm definitely open to the idea. But there's definitely people on both sides of the fence, very very pro sort of AI tooling and very against it actually as well.
Yeah, and I can see like totally from both sides as well then. But I mean, I guess part of that is probably like anything new, like there is that tendency to push back on it. But I'm not saying like don't be cautious here, because there are plenty of reasons to be cautious about it. Not least like the quality of the results that you get out of these things, but also, there's any number of like ethical issues around like the use of AI as well. But so, maybe it's natural to have that kind of pushback, and it's probably a good thing as well. But I mean, not that I know too much about like the sort of Drupal use of AI specifically, but a lot of those things you were describing sound like Like similar things like, you know, time saving things. And it's all, you know, it's almost like a more useful version of like Clippy or something, isn't it? Like you know, just a little like you know, oh, it looks like you're writing a letter. But you know, it's that kind of thing, isn't it? But one that hopefully works slightly better. I think
Yeah,
there's a
this is why.
place for it.
Yeah, I think this is also like, yeah, give me a page at slash events that shows me the top 10 events filtered by region or something, and it built the view or the you needed to do there. Yeah, it's quite interesting. I've just been looking for a link, I can't find it, but there's also, I remember seeing there's sort of some rules about AI, and it was like, make sure there's always a human involved in the process. There was some sort of thing around it. I'll have to find the link to it, but then that might help to ease some of the sort of concerns. You want more like AI, triggering AI, just doing stuff. Things like the alt text, I think it was there, and it was there as a suggestion, and then the human can then obviously review it and replace it if it's wrong. Like
Yes.
it's not set in stone. So I'll have to find those once they're released and published.
Yeah, I think that's really key. Like, I mean, like the human element of it is really key, and that comes down to all sorts of angles, and it's all to do with like using AI responsibly. And I think Microsoft have written like a whole bunch of great stuff about this, about like guidelines and what have you. And if you're deploying like AI features, for example, to end users, it's really important that you let people know that they're
Yes.
interfacing with an AI, right? Because like if you've got a chatbot, say, then people might think they're talking to a human, so it's important not to, you know, to be upfront about what it is that people are interfacing with, right? But yeah, it's, you know, it's as I say, like I think as a tool to sort of augment the work that you're already doing, it's useful as long as like you do like maintain that human element, as you say, like, and have that oversight of it. And I suppose I'm not that I want to put words in your mouth, but maybe part of your concerns is that if it just does something like completely wrong, right? And then, you know, there's you've sort of lost that kind of fail safe there. Or maybe if you're over relying on these tools, then you get yourself into such a state that, you know, it's gone far too down the wrong path if you're building something and what have you, then.
Yeah, I can't think of a good example. I'm trying to think of something maybe with my train hat on. Just like, it's a thinking of like chatbots or something, but yeah, what if it told somebody that, you know, it was just like, you know, the train was at a certain time and it wasn't or something? Maybe there's, yeah, there's definitely things there, but yeah, I think transparency was another one of those key points, I think, and I think that's sometimes a concern for people, that is this actually a bot or a chat thing, or is it like an actual person? Because, you know, I know I've been on certain chatbots going, you know, can I cancel this or can I change that? And never always completely sure whether it is like a person or whether it's an automated thing happening behind the scenes. But
Yeah, and it's
yeah.
worrying, isn't it? Like that, like, I mean, I totally agree with that, that there should be transparency around that. But you know, I mean, there's other, you know, concerns around it, around, you know, I mean, people do use it for, you know, fraudulent reasons as well. And so, because part of the problem I found with it as well, when I started using it for, you know, to help me with, you know, programming, it will occasionally just give you completely the wrong answer, right? So it will hallucinate. It will just like, and more often than not, it will not be able to say, I don't know. It will try and give you an answer, right? And it does it in such convincing language, right? You know, it'll come back and go, certainly, here's how you do this step by step, and here's the reason why this is the correct answer, and here's the reason why this will work. And you go, oh God, that sounds good. That's exactly what I need, kind of thing. And yeah, it turns out to be complete garbage. So yeah, you do need to be wary with these things, and you do. But it's, you know, it's learning how to use the tool, I think. And I think actually that was an example. Spoke about in my talk, wasn't it? It was this New York lawyer, I think Stephen Schwartz is his name, and it was in May last year, and he presented a case in court that was basically entirely based on what he got out of ChatGPT. And
Yeah,
it turns
good
out
luck
that
to your
ChatGPT had
cases.
just completely fabricated this case history that this lawyer presented in court, because he had no idea that it was possible for it to just make stuff up. So yeah,
Yeah,
you need to be wary.
I've heard of that from a few places actually, so I'm assuming it's true. But yeah, I've also got kids, so some of the sort of lower secondary school sort of age. So I'm also wondering, like, how do we know that they're not just going and asking, like, hey, ChatGPT, write this essay for me about the, I don't know, whatever, you know, and doing that. But I think I do think that there was sort
That's true.
of always sort of plagiarism sort of rules in place when I was in school as well. But obviously, we didn't have that as a source
Yes.
necessarily, you know, back then. So
And
I
actually, I
think
think
there
there's
was
tooling
similar things.
to try and automatically detect that now, isn't there, about people using generative AI to
Be.
produce essays and stuff like that. And I think there's actually companies producing stuff that is supposed to detect the likelihood of that being written by AI or whatever. So
Yeah, it has
yeah.
to be, surely. Yeah. I remember thinking that before, that like you type something into a big Word document and then say you copied and pasted it from a textbook. I remember sort of thinking it would like scan your document and then try to compare it with existing textbooks or something. So I'd like to think there's something similar for to do, yeah, for AI or ChatGPT or something. But yeah, I don't know. It's yeah, my son did
Yeah, I'm
something the
sure
other day, and
it
I said, "Oh, is that ChatGPT?" So no, I wrote it. And I'm like, I'm not disagreeing with
is.
you, but it's just, yeah, it was a good piece of writing. But I know it's interesting. The other thing I think about is the work I do with School of Code, which is a boot camp, coding boot camp, and you know, it's sort of a 16-week program with you know, essentially sort of zero to coding. They rely on AI quite heavily, but not so much to write the code, but more as a pre-programming tool. So it's there if you sort of ask questions of and sort of say, hey, well, how do I maybe do this? What's a good idea for that? Or similar, I guess, to you know, kids in school sort of saying, hey, tell me a little bit about this. And they, it's almost a reference point for them to like, here are some key points, you know, you can go away and then do with that what you will, write that into a essay or whatever you need to do with it. But could just be a way of collating information to begin with.
Yeah, I mean that's an interesting question actually, is because I mean I don't actually trust it enough to use it as a source for new learning for myself. So if I'm so I'm teaching myself C sharp at the moment from scratch, but just because I've always been on the periphery of C sharp and I've used it a fair bit in various jobs and contract I've got at the moment, the guys use C sharp and I'm like, okay, it's probably about time like I learn like this language properly.
Yeah.
But I'm doing a traditional route like books and like pre-code camp and stuff like that. I don't think I would trust something like ChatGPT to always tell me the right thing if I'm trying to learn like the fundamentals of a language from scratch. And I wonder how other people who would, because I think it's a fairly obvious use case, isn't it, to sort of have an AI teacher essentially. And I think a lot of people would use it for that kind of thing. And I'm sure there's a whole bunch of companies that provide those sort of products. But yeah, I wonder how people get on with that. And if you're trying to learn programming from scratch, and I wonder if you're finding that a helpful thing, or if you're finding you're going down the wrong path sometimes. And yeah, for me, I think I would probably rely on a sort of trusted source than completely trust this statistical model to chuck the right words at me in the right order, which is essentially what it's doing.
Yeah, I'm sure I've had times where it sort of argue with itself as well. It says do A, so I'll do that, and it doesn't work. And then it's like try B, and that doesn't work either. It says try C, and that's just back to A again, and it get me stuck into this loop, which is
Yeah. Oh yeah.
not
I've had
ideal.
that as well. Yeah. And then it's like I say, like it will give it's so convincing. It's like, oh, here's how you do this thing, and this is exactly why it
Right. Yeah.
works. And then you respond immediately with, actually, that doesn't work at all. And then like it will reply like, oh, you're right, it doesn't. Sorry about that. And it's like, well, yeah, it doesn't work.
It's like I apologize for the confusion or something. That's usual. Something to that effect, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But it's yeah,
Yeah.
easy to forget that it is just a statistical model that's like spitting out like the, statistically most likely next word in a sequence is basically what it's doing. So, but does it in such a way that it's sort of, you have to keep reminding yourself that that's what it is. And it really does trick your brain into thinking that you're, having a human interaction with something which you're not at all. So like, it's not going to show any remorse if it very confidently produces you like something that is you're gonna complete garbage, and then you go back to it and say, well, that's complete garbage. It's like, oh yeah, you're right, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the other thing I'm thinking about is I'm sure the right if it's the right phrase, but prompt engineering, and like it's about how much context do you give you? Because I'm sure I had one of these situations recently where I was trying to do something in Terraform. I can't remember what it was, but I remember tweeting about it, and somebody had said, "Well, yeah, how much context do you giving?" And I do see that sometimes where it's almost like I'm a PHP developer and I'm trying to learn Go, and I'm like, how do I write this? Right, like how much does that extra context that you're giving it help? And I
I
guess
think it
that kind of
does, yeah. I think it's really like the prompt engineering side of it is really key, and like that's an art in itself. And I think even people that research this stuff don't even particularly know why certain prompts perform better than others. Like it's all a bit of a mystery, I think. And there's certain things that you could do. In fact, actually, the latest version of ChatGPT, which I think is 01 or something. So their sort of angle with that is that it's going to do much more on sort of the upfront processing side, and it takes longer to get those responses back, but they're more accurate because it's done more quote unquote thinking. And the thinking bit is basically engineering its own prompts. So it's sort of iteratively going through sort of steps, like breaking problems down into individual steps and then iterating through those and maybe seeing the results that come back and refining that, and it's doing that sort of all itself rather than relying on the human that's asking the question to do that prompt engineering for it. So that's quite an interesting sort of direction that they're taking it in. But yeah, it really is key. And actually, the whole thing about like asking it to solve a problem like step by step, like I find that fascinating, because just adding that to your prompt can like massively increase like the quality of the results you get out of it, which is like that's the same as like how a human would like approach like problem solving, right? You break something down into individual steps kind of thing. So yeah, it's really interesting stuff. But again, like it's more of an art than a science, right? So it's and I think that's really like that's kind of like the key thing, especially for programmers, that it makes it quite a hard sort of tool to work with, because like by design it's random, right? Like when you're so used to building systems where you give the system the same input, you get the same output, ideally anyway. But you kind of want that consistency when you're building a computer system, right? Whereas this is just like it has that randomness built in, like on purpose kind of thing. So it's trying to get your head around that. And when you're doing things like in the little demo app that I built, I was asking it to provide me with like a specific JSON structured like output as well, so I could pass the response back and build my the form options with it. I think that's a fairly like common use case for using these APIs, and I think actually the support that these tools have around that is pretty good now. But again, there's no telling what it's going to come back with. You haven't got a nice API interface where you're guaranteed to get results back in a certain structure. Like, hopefully you do, but yeah.
Yeah, I just made a bit of a mental connection. Yeah, let's see if I can show up. But this is something, an app that you also can't see if you're doing the podcast, but I'm showing Chris on the screen. But this is something that
Koala
came out
Kitchen.
of the Koala Kitchen. This came out of the School of Code demo day for the current cohort, or the one that's just finishing now. This is what my mentee, I guess, is on this thing. So yeah, you sort of go in here and then you put in like ingredients. So you could put in like bread in here. And then I'll put something else in, it's like cheese, add that, and then at the bottom it says find a recipe, and it says then discovering new recipes or blah blah blah. So it's figuring out things in the background here of whatever, and then it's come back with a list of sort of things, if I get the focus right, of just yeah, well, recipes. So you probably can't quite see recipes called like grilled cheese sandwich, cheese and bread croutons, bread and cheese soup. Still might put bread in being celiac gluten free. There we are. But yeah, they were sort of showing a little bit about this in their sort of demo day. But yeah, the amount they were saying about sort of, I'm not sure with prompt engineering, but they definitely have to be very specific around what they got back in terms of I need it to be in this structure, in this format, and lowercase, and blah 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 blah. Yeah, it seems, like I said, I think it's an art unto itself, I
Yes,
think.
yeah, very much so.
But definitely a tool that, is probably worth, I think, looking into. And yeah, I'm like trying to think of any sort of glaring sort of use cases for like AI that, I could probably be making use of on projects, or I don't know, is there like a good starting point for anybody, or do you think is it very case specific, do you think, if people want to start using this sort of generative AI stuff in their projects or their apps?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I touched upon this sort of when I was wrapping up the talk as well. I think a key thing is probably like just because you can use it doesn't necessarily mean you should. There might actually be far simpler ways of achieving something or getting a solution to something like without using it. I can understand like a lot of people might want to start like integrating it into their systems and products from a scalability point of view. I've certainly had that conversation with a fair few people recently. Oh, hello, who's this? Sorry, obviously this podcast,
My cats have just walked
no one
in.
can see the cat that you've
Yeah,
just picked up.
a cat just walked in.
So yeah, I think I would say it's a good thing to keep in mind when thinking about new products and new features. But it's kind of a bit like design patterns. I've always thought like when you start learning design patterns, like there's a tendency to try and shoehorn a design pattern into the solution for something just because you want to use it, which is not really necessarily the best approach. So I would say it's kind of the same thing with AI. Like, I think if you're trying to use it for its own sake or trying to shoehorn it into something, then you're probably doing it wrong, unless your managers ask you to do it because you want to be able to put AI on your product and sell it, and then fine.
Yeah, that's good advice, actually. Yeah.
So yeah, I think the best thing you can really do as a software developer is just to be aware of the kinds of things that are possible to build with these tools, how they work. Things like the cost of them is really important. Things like I mean, there's a whole other conversation you could have about how to get this stuff into production as well, and how to monitor these things and check that models don't degrade and like all the rest of it. And it's hours and hours that you could talk about that sort of stuff. But I think just in the early going, just be aware of the kind of different tools that are out there, the different APIs, different products, because it's a whole bunch of it's not just OpenAI, right? There's a whole bunch. They also have slightly different strengths and weaknesses, slightly different price points, etc. And but yeah, like something to just I think keep in mind as because it does genuinely give you a whole new way of solving certain problems, in a way that we've not been able to do programmatically in the past. Because yeah, as I say, just using that sort of form filling example, like if you were going to write a system to be able to respond in the way that an AI chatbot can respond, then it would just be incredibly complex. Like you would never be able to write something like that, right? So yeah, so that's probably the best advice I can give about it.
If people do want to start looking at using it, are there packages, plugins that people can plug in? Or I remember seeing, the DrupalCon thing they were saying about making or having a sort of abstraction layer in between. So in theory, you could swap out different agents or different models, and probably get my terminology mixed up. So you could switch from using, say, OpenAI and ChatGPT to Llama. That's probably as far as my knowledge goes on this, I suppose. But if there are particular tools, is there a particular package per model or supply, or is there just one sort of AI package people can put in and then?
So the one the wrapper that the API wrapper that I used was an OpenAI specific one, and actually that was Nuno Maduro's come up a couple of times in this talk already.
I
But
have to get Nuno on the pod,
that's
actually. Yeah.
absolutely. That was one of his libraries. So that's the one that I use, but I think that was OpenAI specific. I think you can also get more sort of generic wrappers for this, because a lot of them are basically doing the same thing, right? But that'll be for sort of using like the API interfaces for these like chatbots or these LLMs and what have you. There's a whole other framework world out there, and most of it is Python based. You've got things like LangChain, which gives you like a whole bunch of tooling if you're looking to build and manage these models yourself. And there are, from what I've seen, some PHP equivalents. I don't know how like widely used they are. As I say, like a lot of this stuff sort of tends to live in sort of Python world more than PHP world. I think probably if you're going to be doing this stuff in PHP, you're likely to be using APIs to do it, I would have thought. Just because so much of the ecosystem is in Python. But yeah, there's certainly stuff out there that exists in PHP that will help you use it for sure.
Let's have a quick look on like NPM as well. There's a lot of like OpenAI and things I'd well search for OpenAI. So there definitely seems to be options there again as well. So yeah, it feels like there's a whole
Yeah.
rabbit hole we probably could go down and try to get
Absolutely.
this to work. But
In fact, yeah,
yeah.
that's worth mentioning, like the tooling in sort of JavaScript, TypeScript land, there'll be much more there again than there'll be in PHP. So if you're looking to do something sort of more in the nuts and bolts of it, or looking to do things like on your own like models, or if you're using, you know, like any of the open models or anything like that, any of the open source stuff, then yeah, you're probably going to be in that world more than the PHP world, I would thought, just because of the tooling and the ecosystem around it.
Interesting. That's cool. The slides for your talk online or the video of your talk online anywhere that I can link to?
Yes,
Somewhere?
I put a link to them on my website, which is scootsoftware.com. But also, I put the source code for the little demo app that I built up on GitHub. So it's just Chris hyphen Ballard. It's my GitHub. So yeah, it's all up there.
Have to go and have a look at that. But yeah, I can definitely go back and watch the demo video as well again because yeah, been impressed by that at the time. And yeah, it's just do like a good live demo. So much worth doing them.
Yeah, the only
Yeah,
thing that went
cool.
slightly wrong with the projector, which I'm told now by grizzled vets like yourself, is just standard grappling with projectors. So, but yeah, apart
Yeah,
from that, I was quite pleased with how it went.
projectors. I've had fun with. So going up, traveling up to meet up, but I just won't say which one it is just for the sake of it. But I'm up there to do my usual thing of tinkering with speaker notes and things. I've got the slides written, but I'm like, oh, I should put this note in or whatever. I get to the venue and like the laptop is now the other side of the room because that's where the HDMI cable is, and I'm just using like a normal clicker, which is fine. But of course, I can't see any of the notes, so I'm sort of ad-libbing for want of a better phrase, I guess this. And then, yeah, or I'm trying to do like a demo and I'm sort of trying to hold like a mic in one hand and type with another hand. Yeah, not all things are equal for live demos, but, or you just get it
Yes.
from different places. But yeah, there's always like, yeah, there's always different screens or different projectors or different qual, there's always sorts of things,
Yeah.
to be wary of. But it's just the more, I guess, you travel around these different meetups, you see different things and. And you've got speakers, we've got bags of adapters for cables and things. Lots better than you travel, I think, these days. But one for HDMI, one for whatever, all the different connectors to the different screens. And
Absolutely, yeah.
one to us at a conference. And yeah, we had to borrow somebody else's laptop to do it, which was would have been quite interesting. But there we go. That was fun. That wasn't me, there was somebody else. But yeah, I've always got, because my talks are usually done through PDF and like RSV to PDF and PDF PC. So usually I've just got PDFs on a backup stick, backup PDFs on a USB stick. So worst case, I'll plug
Yeah.
into somebody else's machine and just present it from PDF. But yeah, if you haven't got things like PDF PC, then you're not going to get the speaker notes in the right place. But yeah, imagine trying to do that with something like those old, well, for me, I guess I've not used them for a while, but like JavaScript based slide decks and things, and you're trying to present from that, so the machine would be a nightmare. But there we are.
Yeah. I did the same because I'm super paranoid as well. So I did say I had like PDF on a stick as well, like, you know, could try and couple, because it'd just be like, it'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Well, I suppose like In our, in our scenario, we'd probably just knock off to the pub early, wouldn't we? So it wouldn't be the end of the world, but it'd be a bit disappointing.
Yeah, everyone crowded with a little laptop and I do like trying to see what's going on. But good fun. But yeah, like I say, yeah, everybody wants everyone to do well. It's a really good environment. And I'd like to see actually people, more people doing it. Really sort of, I've done a lot of talks at different meetups, and the first one I did started up again, which I think is fun. I have to do another talk there just for the nostalgia point of it. But it's always great to see people giving talks, and a lot of the time is, oh, I can't speak about that because I don't know everything about it or whatever. And when I was organizing PHP meetups or Drupal meetups, I just give a talk about this. If you found a library or a package or a module or something that you've used this week, do a 5-minute talk about, like, this is the module, this is what it does, maybe do a couple of screenshots, done. Yeah, and it's just getting it's always great to see people doing it. And it's not, you don't always get the same people speaking all the time then. But again, with my School of Code mentoring hat on, it looks great on a CV to be like, yeah, I've done this talk at this meetup or whatever. It's you never know where it's going to take you. Like, say it's
No.
DrupalCon Barcelona and other places. Never the a lot of
Absolutely.
these
Living the
places
jet
if
set lifestyle.
speaking.
No,
Yeah,
I
it's
mean, I
never
agree with
the
that completely. Like, if anyone's thinking of giving it a go and, haven't plucked up the courage yet or doesn't know what to speak about, yeah, just absolutely go ahead and do it. Like, it's great fun. And, my one piece of advice would be to maybe not be overambitious like me. My next one would be
Yeah,
simpler.
that'd be good. Yeah, if you come to PHP Southwest, Dave will ask you within 5 minutes. We're gonna give a talk about it anyway. With Dave's superpowers is concerning speakers, but yeah,
Oh yeah,
at
I
the
was
top of
accosted pretty quickly when I started turning up for
the
to give a talk.
yeah,
So yeah, it will happen. But please
yes,
come to PHP Southwest if you're in the Southwest.
definitely. Oh yeah, I've heard people say, like, I saw it on Twitter recently, like, do you have a local user group? And a lot of people actually said no. And then they were like, if you don't have one, then sort of start one. It's just like an informal thing. I'm trying to get the local sort of South Wales Drupal group maybe back together again, just something informal every so often. And I think I fell down that trap of it needs to be every month and has to have a speaker and has to have this and that. And I think I've seen a lot more of the groups now, probably post-COVID. Some of them are doing it every other month or even every quarter. And maybe a mixture of different types of events as well. So it's not like necessarily a one-size-fits-all approach. So yeah, it's just great to, just say being at a conference or a meetup, just to be, oh, well, what are you doing with this? Or what are you doing with that? And how does this work? And you've always gone away with learning things. And there's a couple of people at meetups with little notebooks and they're taking notes and everything. It's, you'd like to think that people then, sometimes like a tweet some people afterwards and they're like, oh, I did a Tailwind talk at WordCamp while I was speaking at WordCamp for some reason. I can't remember why. It was in Bristol from what I remember. And I think I ended up going to Cheltenham beforehand to have a trial run of it from a WordPress talk. But yeah, someone was, months afterwards, I saw this tweet from Adam Wathen, the Tailwind guy. And he was like, oh, how did you find out Tailwind? How did you start using it? And someone replied and said, I saw someone give a talk at a conference about it. And I then had a quote discussion with them afterwards about how it wasn't very good and this is not how you write CSS and everything. And they said, yeah, go away and try it for 2 weeks and then come back and, if you don't like it, then don't use it anymore. But then he said, oh, I like it and I've used it everything since and et cetera, et cetera. And the next tweet was like, oh, and that person was at OPD on there. So it's always good when you can sort of people learn stuff from the talks that you've given. And if you can, I think you said, oh, if you spark that little bit of that inspiration in people, then I think, yeah, people are, oh, I'm gonna go and, if it's in the back of my mind then to think like how I could use like an AI implementation, like from what similar to what you were showing in something, then I've got that there in the back of my mind already to be like, oh, I could do something like that, like not just for the sake of it, as you were saying, but if there's a genuine problem they're trying to solve, and I can then draw the dots between that and go, oh, I remember that talk that I saw about that. And now I know sort of where to start, probably a bit more as well. Yeah, I think
Totally,
that's
yeah.
just rewarding as a speaker to do that. and to sort of
Yeah, absolutely. It's a powerful thing, isn't it? If you think, without wanting to be too grandiose about it, like this, the thought is, if one person goes away from this talk thinking, "Oh, I've learned something," or that's made me think about something, then that's a great thing. That's a wonderful thing. But there's so many benefits to meetups anyway, isn't there? Like you learn stuff, like you've got like professional development from the point of like networking and what have you. But even just like meeting like a local community, there's I work fully remote now, so, and have done for a number of years, and there's pros and cons to it, but like it's nice to be able to leave the house and talk face to face with other guys, and occasionally that's a benefit. So yeah, no, it's...
One more quick, so I was looking at keeping on the time, but
yeah, sure.
school of code again. Who's recently sort of graduated, or a couple of girls graduated from that. I was speaking at a PHP meetup. I was at a Hack Day actually in Birmingham, probably back in January, and he wasn't on the team that I was mentoring, but he was there and said hello and everything. So I'm up at a PHP meetup somewhere else, and I was giving a talk, gave my talk, start speaking to people, and he was there, sort of half recognized him from this thing. People in different places, my brain doesn't quite figure that out straight away. So we were doing that, and there were two other guys that were there, and we were sort of speaking. And you had a PHP meetup, so you can say like, "Hey, what do you do with PHP?" And he said, "Well, I don't. I do JavaScript stuff. I've just done a boot camp. It's School of Code." And I just want to learn about PHP and meet people and networking. And we met some people there, and they run a PHP company, a Drupal company. And after a while, he's had a trial with them, and now he works for them full time. And he was just a DrupalCon with one of his teammates. So
Nice,
goes to
amazing.
show, how getting into it, well, I guess getting into tech, but also be able to sort of meet people and network and show some sort of interest and willingness to learn new things. And he then was we did a call to sort of show something he'd been building, and we did a quick sort of consulting call, I guess, essentially, to show me what he'd been building. And that's what he demoed to them and got a trial and got a job. So from actually, I did something similar. Actually, first Drupal meetup I did, went to Drupal meetup and met a guy and ended up interviewing an agency a few months later, and the guy was there, and I was like, "Oh, we met at a meetup." It's just a great icebreaker. So
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's great. Yeah, thoroughly recommend it.
cool. I said we could try to finish with one, and then carried on. We've carried on going. So
Oops.
we probably should wrap. It's fine. We probably should wrap this up. Awesome. Is there anywhere else? I know you'd mentioned a few links earlier on. Anywhere else that people can find you online, Chris, if people want to find out more?
Find my website, I suppose, all on LinkedIn. Chris Barton on LinkedIn is probably the best place. But yeah, I mean, I do the whole Twitter thing, but not so much these days, to be honest. But I'd go with LinkedIn. It's probably the best one.
Awesome. There we go. Great. So thank you, everybody, for joining listen to the podcast. Thank you, Chris, for being a guest. The
Thanks for having me.
next
It's been great.
episode, I think we could probably get the one with Dave Limmer out next. I think I'm a little bit behind because of DrupalCon, but I've got a few next terms. So I think Dave's one's got up next, so we can have another PHP Southwest next episode as well. So obviously that'll go up before this one. But thank you again for taking the time. I will see you at PHP Southwest again, hopefully soon.
Absolutely.
Thanks everyone for listening to the Beyond Blocks podcast. I'm Oliver Davis.